Welcome back, everyone, to the Language and Behavior Podcast. I have the phenomenal, brilliant, fantastic, I'm trying to think of more adjectives, but the wonderful Charlie Peck with me.
Nice to see you, Josh. Thank you.
I know last time we had a wonderful guest, and then we got to jump into restorative practices, and we've got some more questions from our listeners. But before we do that, Charlie, I know that when I was with you in Northern Kentucky, we had an opportunity to speak with a bunch of phenomenal leaders in the area. And we haven't had a chance to actually talk about that event and some of the things that we were able to present. We also got to record another podcast with each other, actually in a studio, which was an amazing experience. But for that event with TMI, will you just share a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, we have not talked about that. It is so incredible. And even just since then, like so many people from our community came together from the Kentucky, Cincinnati area, because they all want mental health to improve in their schools too. And there's so many partnerships going on. And so Talent Magnet Institute, who we were introduced to in our webinar, for those people who showed up to the webinar in April, they got to hear Mike Sipple, and like the CEO of, well, we say TMI. So guys, listen, when we're saying TMI, that means Talent Magnet Institute. That's what we're referring to. But yeah, we just brought everybody in the community together who either had funding to help people partner up for mental health. Here's what people are looking for, Josh. As you know, it's not just about the students. I mean, the students always benefit from the adults getting the mental health support. And so that's where we come in. That's what we're doing to equip them. Yeah. What was your role there? I mean, I thought it was awesome.
Well, one, I got to see in person.
I know.
That was awesome. That was the first time we've actually met, even though we've done so many projects together, both podcasts, webinars, and the book, of course. But yeah, that was amazing. And then just the, like I said, to be able to sit down with you on a podcast in a real life studio and to see that end of it and be able to talk through the book and all the things that we're providing to school districts, but then to then kind of flush that out first in the morning and then go over and, you know, talk with all those amazing school leaders was really, really fun. And then to meet Mike in person too, and his team, what a great group of people. They're so kind and so helpful too. And then just, you know, seeing you in action too, getting to present with you was really, really fun. So I thought the event was awesome. Everyone was just obviously seeking for resources for such an important topic. To be present for that was incredible. So I enjoyed my time a lot. I know another thing that's happening too, Charlie, that people are reaching out about is, well, they're looking at their budgets. They're seeing that they're starting to get money for the next school year and looking to get the book for some book studies. I know that we have our book study kit that's available for free for folks too. And will you just share out a little bit about, you know, that free resource that we provide?
Yeah, I love it, because the whole idea is we just want people to take this information and easily use it. How do we implement it easily? And so if you're going to do a book study, then you've got everything there as a facilitator guide. Like, so there's a facilitator guide that actually walks you through everything. It provides worksheets that are printable, so you can just distribute them or electronically, or you just print them out yourself. There's also email templates. I added that too in there, like, because you and I were talking about how to get people to easily get the information and just make it so darn easy for people to sign up. And so when you and I were talking, we're like, hey, why don't we just give them email templates? And so we did that too. And again, it's all there. Reflection questions are all there. It is totally free. It's just totally free. The guide, it is. So we also wanted everyone to know that if you do a bulk order, if you do it in bulk and you go through Connected Ed, that's our publishers, they have a form that Josh is putting up. They have a form that if you fill it out and you get, I think it's 15 at a minimum, then you get a percentage off of that. So it might even be 10, but I don't know. You just have to fill the form out. People can order their own when you do a book study. Like, so you don't have to take on the cost of that. But if you can, and you're in a district or an organization, go ahead and get that discount. Don't miss out on that. And you've got the kit for free. Yeah. So yeah. I'm excited about that kit.
Definitely. And then we've provided, and I don't know if we've said this on the podcast, but you know, for those who are doing a book study, just reach out to us and let us know. And then at the end, once you guys have gone through the book study, you've gone through the book, Charlie and I, one of us or both of us can jump on. And we love giving a free 30 minutes of our time just to talk with your staff and do a Q&A. Those are always really, really fun. So take advantage. Of course, we'll have the links in the show notes for the bulk order, but then also for the book study guide that we've got, that kit, which is free. So make sure you're taking advantage of both. And then, yeah, Charlie, if you're ready, we can jump into this week's question.
Yes, this is such a big question. So yeah, let's dive in.
Okay. So we had a teacher reach out and they asked, how might I be instigating a power struggle with my students? So what comes to mind in regards to power and how that dynamic works in the classroom?
Yeah, I always think of language first. It tends to pop up for me. So anytime we use absolutes like you have to do this or you need to do this now or you're going to sit down or else, right? So those kind of things, like it doesn't give the kid or sometimes it's a staff that we're talking to, like either a colleague or somebody that we're working with who kind of works under us. But if we're talking about a classroom setting especially, if we're telling kids that they have to do something, it kind of backs them in a corner. And especially when there's an audience, they might start talking back or it might really trigger that resistance from them. So we need to give them some autonomy. So that's one thing that comes to my mind. What about you?
Yeah, that power struggle is very real. I know, and this is just adolescence in general, but yeah, if there were friends around, if there was an audience, like you said, that's going to most likely cause a negative reaction with that student, probably in their language, probably with their behavior and how they react to being corrected. So yeah, for an administrator working with our teachers, first off, it was like talking about getting on the same level and proximity and pulling them away from, you know, those around them to have a one-on-one conversation. And we always equated it to like, how would you like to be communicated to? So like for myself as administrator, would you like me to call you out in a staff meeting, or would you like me to have a conversation one-on-one in your classroom? And of course, everyone's like, one-on-one conversation. Like, I don't need my business in front of everyone else. And so I know that in the moment as a teacher, it's very stressful in the sense that I've got to do a lot of things in a little bit of time. And so sometimes we just cut corners by, I'm going to have this quick conversation with this kid, try and get him back on track. And then it turns into a power struggle because it's a conversation in front of 30 other people. And so I always like to just kind of equate that to like, how would you like to be communicated to and put yourself in their shoes? So that way they hopefully had that lens when they're having that crucial conversation with that child.
Yeah. And they're just trying to save face, of course, too. I mean,
oh, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So another thought that I had too was the energy level. I always talk in terms of energy and not like in a foo-foo way, you guys, but in a way that like I've said this before about nervous systems. And every time I learn about the neurobiology and just what's going on in our bodies connected to our brain, it really is about that energy level that we have. And so that's what shifts it. So the lower we are, like the lower our tone of voice is, our stance, our presence, we've talked about presence in other episodes before. And if we're thinking about our energy level, we don't want to match theirs if it's a high energy level and we're trying to calm it. So we go opposite. But you and I have talked about this before too, when we're talking about building rapport and connection. We do match their energy level to a point or their rate of speech sometimes. But in this situation, we're talking about power struggle. Anytime that we lean forward or we get like a louder tone, even our tone of voice, but our facial expression, all of that's communicating a message to them and they can pick up very quickly. Kids are great at this, especially adolescents, about whether you're being like condescending or whether you're trying to assert power. And gaining that connection is never about asserting power. It's about still having a position of authority, which is really tough for some people to understand. You're still in an authority role, but you can hand over power so that other person doesn't feel beneath you. That never feels good to anybody, no matter who you are, how old you are. You know, it's different with a toddler who's about ready to run into the street and you just need to pick that toddler up physically and pull them back. Like that's very different. But when we're talking with kids who are big, but they're not grown, we have to soften our approach with them. We can be firm, but we need to be fair and not try to climb that ladder of conflict, which we've talked about. So that energy level to me, I think about that a lot as well. So not only our language, but matching the energy that we need to have. Sometimes it's hurry up, we got to move through this. But then most of the times it's really about slowing down. So yeah. I have a lot of scenarios that pop in my head when I'm thinking about it.
I know, I was thinking about a student too in my office and they were having trouble with a teacher and they were saying like, I don't get to do anything. Like it's all no, when I ask to do things. And so it was a sense of control for that teacher, and that student was feeling it. And unfortunately in this child's life, they didn't feel like they had control in much of anything. You know, it was controlled at home and then controlled at school. And so what they were doing was they were bristling and then just doing the opposite of what the teacher wanted. And so for my conversation with the teacher was just, what hill are you willing to die on? Are there some choices that we can provide? So for instance, like, you know, it's reading time and they want to go sit somewhere else. Does it have to be no? Like, can we give some options that you're comfortable with? So you're still having control as a teacher. You're dictating the three options that you're providing. But for that student, they feel like they're getting to choose at least something within their day. And so once the choices were starting to be provided for a whole host of things, because the teacher kind of got a light bulb moment with that, and we were able to provide a little bit of context about what was going on in that child's life, things got 100 times better, because now the student felt like they had some ownership in what was going on in the classroom. And the teacher still felt fine because they still had control of the choices, and they were all choices that they felt very comfortable with.
Yeah. And that makes me think about trauma. So when we're talking about trauma, these kids especially, they have had very little, if any, choice in their life at all. And so empowerment is the way to go when we're treating them. And if you think of, what's the name of that movie? It'll come to me because it's one of my favorite movies ever. But like when I'm thinking of when I was first trained in trauma, one of the first things they told me to do is just sit there and let them talk. Like just wait till they talk. Just wait. It's Good Will Hunting. Remember that movie? Did you see that?
That is my favorite movie, Charlie.
I know. I say it as like one of my top three. I got a couple other in there, but top three.
That is the favorite movie I have. And funny as I just showed it to my oldest daughter.
Did you really? There you go. See, I mean, it's an incredible scenario there. If you guys haven't seen it, I won't give too much away, but Robin Williams is the therapist, right? For Matt Damon, his character. And he just sits there quietly and waits for Matt Damon to talk. And it's really funny, really clever, just so moving. I love, but it's empowerment to let the other person just sometimes decide when it's time to speak. In my head, I'm thinking about a lot of scenarios in the hospital I used to work in the crisis unit with teens. And we had a kid who, she was really traumatized by a police officer in a lot of different ways. So anytime she saw a uniform, anybody in uniform, she would react. And a lot of times she would get up and punch a wall. And so I was talking about energy level before, like we've got to act quickly with that. That's not something we can just slowly wait for. So I would address her pretty quickly. I wanted her to protect herself from herself, right? And getting hurt. But she would literally be doing something very quietly and get up and just go punch a wall if she had somebody in uniform in sight. And you can imagine there's nurses there. There's sometimes security and all that. And so when we worked with her, it had to come from an empowerment. And so we would give her very small choices. I mean, it would go from even, are you going to have to eat? Do you want 10 more minutes or do you want 20 more minutes to go do this? I mean, there were a lot of little choices, but in doing that approach, you're giving her a little power back. And so over time that builds trust and it makes her feel confident in her own abilities to trust her own judgment sometimes. So it really depends where that's coming from, but when we talk about power struggle, a lot of times teachers or people in authority positions, they're afraid to give that over. They're afraid to give choice, but you can do it in a way that is still keeping your authority intact, but still giving them that autonomy that is so important in that relationship.
What about phrasing, Charlie? I know sometimes that can also trigger a student, just the words that we're using to get the student to do something. So is there anything that comes to mind in regards to that?
Yeah, I think it's a really important one. Like, you know, sometimes the whole because I said so, that's asserting authority.
That whole thing. I heard that so many times growing up.
Oh my gosh, I know. And it's all bad. They didn't really think to do anything different. And we listened. We listened. Typically, I don't know. I don't think I always did. I don't think you always did too.
No.
But in school, like those authority positions, sometimes it's just like, I don't really care if you ask me, you don't get to have a question answered. Mm-hmm. Like you're not important enough. So it sent different messages, but like you can actually talk about the why, but you also don't have to go on and on. And I will say this, sometimes people ask why, because they're still just trying to get their way and buy their time. So when little kids are doing that and they keep saying why over and over and over, what they're really trying to say is, I'm trying to figure out how to get my way here. And so we have to be cautious there. So we could just, I love what the strategy is it helps me a lot. Be firm and repeat your answer. Or there's a point where you could say, I'm not going to say any more about that. And then don't. The problem is we engage and we keep going beyond that, or we keep answering their why. It's okay to give people a foundation of what's going on, the purpose. But if they're doing it in a way just to manipulate you or try to find a way out of it, that's different. And you typically know. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, the firm piece, I've done this several times and I had an aspiring leader with me. And so like, for instance, I would tell the student what to do and then I'd just turn around and I'd walk away. And the aspiring leader was confused as to like, why would you do that? And I said, well, I just trust that they're going to do what I asked them to do. I'm not going to stand there and have a conversation about it or even give them time to propose something different. It's really a non-negotiable. They just need to go and do it. And I'm going to assume that they're going to. And by doing that, like most often, the student would comply and do it because one, it wasn't anything abnormal or crazy as far as the request.
Yeah.
And two, I did want to trust them as a young adult and I didn't want to have like a conflict or anything, leaving it open for them to even question it. So it was just like, I'm going to tell them what to do and I'm going to walk away. So,
yeah. You know, what's different there? Here's what's different. That? You had confidence and that mm-hmm. comes off right so easily. Like if you are confident and you say it firmly, that kid is not going to question you as much. And that does have to do with positioning, like posturing, body language, all that, the firm yeah. voice.
And I had trust with them. It wasn't like it was a kid I had just met. I mean, I had a relationship with all of these students, but I also knew that if I was going to provide space for questioning, that would probably occur. But most often, like you said, I wasn't being the authority figure as far as like proximity or towering over them or yelling at them or having a negative tone. It was within respect, but I also wanted them to do what I wanted them to do and trusted that they would do that. I think that went a long way.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you something first, because I want your opinion on this and I think other people would benefit. If you were in a situation where, because this happened to me with my assistant principal mm-hmm. in high school. So this was high school. But if my assistant principal knew that there was a conflict that I was having with a student, I wasn't being unreasonable with what I was asking the student to do. And the kid got in trouble, sent them to the office. And then the assistant principal told me to come in so that she could mediate the two mm-hmm. of us. So I'm curious, at that time, I felt very disrespected by the assistant principal by expecting her to mediate the kid with me. I didn't feel like that was right at the time. I have some hindsight now, kind of like, yeah. But what are your thoughts in that kind of situation?
Did the assistant principal have a one-on-one conversation with you to ask permission to do that?
No. And that was a problem. And the other thing is, I had a pretty good reputation for being able to mitigate situations with students mm-hmm. at this point in my career. And she was brand new to our building, didn't know much, and tried to come in and assert her authority everywhere. Sure. And so that's a great question. I'm glad you asked. I think I know why. What else would you
say? Well, so the reason for that, and this is similar to the topic that we had last time with the restorative practices, like if I was to do a restorative circle with two students, I would always meet with each individual student first to make sure that it was okay to actually go through it. Because if you have one student that feels like what you're feeling or is like, no, absolutely not, I don't want to be in that room. Or maybe it's, I need time to think through it and I'll give you my answer later. Like, I think there is a form of permission that needs to occur prior to bringing two parties in together to mediate or to have a restorative circle. So, you know, I would obviously try to, you know, if I thought it would be beneficial, I'd ask them to do it and try to persuade them as far as the benefit. But if someone was like, no, absolutely not, then I'm not going to put two people in the room together. So that was kind of a red flag in my head that conversation never occurred prior to the meeting. And I can mm-hmm. only imagine the emotions that you had walking into a room and seeing the other person and then finding out in that moment that is what's going to occur.
Yeah. It's one of those moments in my career. I was not happy. Mm-hmm. and I have to put my therapist hat aside and my parent hat aside in this. I had to put my teacher kind of hat back on because I know a lot of teachers feel like their voice is not heard. They're not being considered. Yeah. And there are some people in administration who it seems like, I'm not saying this is true, but it seems like they're just taking the kid's word and not bringing in the teacher's voice. And so I think that's what's happening with teachers these days. I felt it myself, that they felt unseen themselves, undervalued, unheard. And so when we talk about supporting the teacher and the kid, you and I are always so cautious about, well, we also do want to support the teacher, but I do believe we do need to shake up the thought that we have to always have absolute authority. And I think that's where a lot of the problems in our schools are coming with behavior is, and again, I was there early in my career. I felt like I had to assert power over my students and it just didn't work out. It didn't work well. It's not what worked. So if, when I shifted that, that's when everything felt way more powerful together in a space together. I never felt like I had to be the authoritarian. I also never felt like I was permissive at all. Like I wasn't like that either.
Yeah, I think it's definitely that balance, you know, based on everything we're talking about. And we have to understand that the students are part of the environment. Like they do need to have, they need to feel valued. They need to feel like they're welcome. They also need to feel like they have some authority too in that space about what's going on in the schools. I think when they feel powerless and they feel like they're not wanted or that they don't have any value in that school building, I think that's when things go sideways. So all things to consider.
For sure. We want them to learn to advocate. We want them to ask what they need and communicate effectively. But
for sure.
But with, you know, with the ways that they need to do it.
All right. I'm going to throw this link up for everyone. Charlie, will you real quick talk about just the community that's being built through Talent Magnet and with Thriving Educators specifically?
Yes, I'm so excited. And you all, that's what Josh came into. Well, Kentucky and Ohio, you are in two states that you had never been in a matter of what, an hour and a half?
So. Yeah, it was way closer than I anticipated. And downtown Cincinnati was really, really fun. I had never been to that city before.
It's amazing. There's so much to do. And if you all have not visited, you all have to get here. It's awesome. Okay. So yes. So we are trying to scale the work that we're doing. We're equipping educators and leaders. And it's those, it's not for everybody. The thing is you've got to want to be a part of the mental health change. You have to want to be a more effective educator or leader. You have to want to be involved in this transformation that we're trying to do with better classroom management and just feeling joy in our professional lives, which also gets you, you know, happy and joy into your personal life, but also being able to manage all of, you know, the ups and downs of the profession. I mean, it can't be happy and joy all the time, but being able to respond more effectively to those power struggles and to the things that come that seem disruptive that we can absolutely reduce. And so we created this platform for kind of meeting the masses, but bringing communities together too and sharing ideas. So I'm excited. It's called Thriving Educator Premium. And if you go to this link, you can just see there's the course for the 9 essential skills on its own. It's self-paced, but the premium experience is what we're trying to get people to do because you get that, but you also get live trainings every first Tuesday of the month and just so much more live Q&A, tons of resources, all of that. So yeah, go check out that link. Just see if that's something for you. And then there's a long-term solution there too for you to be a part of the change and transformation.
Love it. Yeah, we can't do this work alone. So we need to make sure that we're finding other educators all over the world to help and assist. And so this is a perfect place for you to go. And so we'll make sure that this link is in the show notes. Of course, if you're looking for more information in regards to what Charlie has to offer, she's got a plethora of things on her website. So you can go over to thrivingeducator.org. Or if you want to look at more of the podcasts, the services, free resources that we provide, you can head over to joshhammer.com/language of behavior. We've got the study kit there too for the book. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things, relationship inventory. You can find those things there. And then of course, we love getting questions from our listeners. So make sure that you head over to the bit.ly, it's /LOB questions. And this is where we take the questions from those who are in the classroom and in the campuses. And then of course, you know, you can share your name. You don't have to. We take a lot of anonymous also. We understand that, you know, you may not want to share out, you know, where you're at or your name. So we want to respect that too. So we appreciate everyone that's listening. And of course, if you need anything, you can find Charlie and I. We're here for you and anything that you need. Charlie, do you have any last words for this episode?
Yeah. So the Thriving Educator Premium right now, we're covering the three tenets. We've been doing that recently. And so for the month of June, covering the third tenet, which is responding with intention. And there is so much there. that will be applicable to this episode. And we're talking about responding with strategic plans here and strategies, just tools and strategies. You can have a plan, but you can also have just little strategies to help with certain issues. So as I'm planning that out for June, it just came up into my mind. There's a ton in that chapter. So that's in the book, but you can also show up for Thriving Educator Premium to learn it live.
Awesome. I hope everyone has a wonderful week. And again, if you need anything, we're here to support you. And with that, we're going to close episode 24 and make sure that you're clicking on the links and finding all the additional resources to help you as the end of the school year is right around the corner.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.